It is Thursday, and that means time once again for Perspectives on WFSU-FM. How you doing? Tom Flanagan with you, and so glad that you can be a part of this conversation via telephone and email and Twitter and all the other multiple fashions we have in the way of communications nowadays. Telephone number 414-1234 if it's local. Long distance 800-926-8809. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email, or send us a tweet at WFSU Perspective. I was looking through a bunch of online business publications in the run-up to today's program, and I'll tell you, if you're a national retail chain, there is not much good news. Toys R Us in bankruptcy, shutting down nearly 200 locations, including the one in Tallahassee, as you just heard about. Sam's Club vacating 63 stores. Tallahassee is not on that list, at least not yet. Macy's shuttering 11 stores, Gainesville, Florida being the closest one to us. I dropped by there the other day, and they wouldn't go on the record, but it indicated that at least they're going to be around for a while. They hope permanently, but we'll see. Then there's Sears, Kmart, J. Crew, The Gap, Banana Republic, Ann Taylor, Michael Kors. The list just goes on. That means a bunch of American malls are going to be scrambling to fill all of those empty spaces in the months and the years to come. But meanwhile, it seems that small, locally owned stores are in large part avoiding that shutdown mania, even though they, like the big guys, are also having to compete in the area of online shopping and that sort of thing. So what does all this mean for Tallahassee, especially a community which, as you probably have already heard from the Office of Economic Vitality, things are a boom in this town. There's construction. There's all kinds of big happenings, of course, in the rental housing sector. We seem to build a lot of those nowadays, but there's some other things going on, and we thought, let's have a roundtable about it. And we're going to go around and meet that roundtable and invite you, as always, to be part of that conversation. Representing Frenchtown, represent Mataki Akbar, born and raised in Tallahassee, graduate of FAMU DRS. Undergrad degree from Morehouse, graduate with honors from University of Miami School of Law, public defender in West Palm Beach, moved back to Tallahassee about 11 years ago to open the Akbar Law Firm, which is in the heart of Frenchtown, focusing on criminal defense, personal injury, and family law. Welcome back home, Mataki Akbar.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
And I can't wait to hear how business is going for you and what you see as the vision for the Frenchtown of the future.
Yes.
Okay, right. Next door, we have a fellow by the name of Paul Bradshaw, owner of Blue Dog Investments, the firm behind the coming freight yard development in All Saints, which is going to be a multi-use complex made out of repurposed shipping containers. Boy, that idea has been kicking around for a while now, hasn't it?
It has, yeah, for more than a decade, but you don't see many of them around yet, so we're excited.
Yeah, there seem to be a bunch of them. I was watching a CSX freight go by the last night, and I thought, there's a lot of housing on that train.
Yeah, there is an estimate that there are 2 million abandoned shipping containers in America, so there's plenty of them.
I want to hear some more about that idea, too. Next door to Paul is Jesse Edmonds. He is a partner and manager in Seven Hills Hospitality Group, the owner and operators of several signature and high-quality local food service establishments. You may have patronized some of them, like the Liberty Bar and Restaurant, the newly opened Hawthorne, the refined dining experience just next door. I remember, Jesse, when that was a state unemployment office.
Oh, wow. Yeah. We have photos. When the building was originally built, it was the Jitney Jungle Grocery Store. Mm-hmm. And photos of that in the 50s and stuff, those hang in the hallway at Liberty. So it's a really interesting building. And it's kind of nice to see, you know, genuine exposed brick and, you know, kind of see, you know, slab poured, and you see footprints of the construction workers that laid it still in the slab. It's a really cool building.
Yeah, that's something that you just can't replicate on a national chain level where everything is prefab. They bring it in and they throw it up here in a couple, 3 weeks. And rounding out our panel is Joe Berg, president of the All Saints District Community Association, a small business strategist by trade, director of the newly minted Shop Local 850, an organization and network dedicated to making Tallahassee more like Tallahassee. The Yes, We're Local campaign. That's all yours, Joe.
Yeah, it's just a bunch of businesses trying to encourage people to check out new things and meet neighbors.
Okay, let's go around the table here and just say, how is biz? That seems to be a good opening, Mr. Akbar.
Business is doing really well. I was excited to move back to Tallahassee and open up my law firm. Of course, it was scary to do it, but one of the best things that I could have done is come back to Tallahassee, and second best was to come right into Frenchtown, where the people that I represent are right in that area. And it gives a different look to Frenchtown. There used to be tons of professional businesses in the area, doctor's offices, dentist offices, law offices, stores, restaurants, all kind of things. And that kind of faded out over the years. So it's exciting to be able to bring that type of business back into the area and get people excited about Frenchtown again.
Yeah, because it's going through some changes. There actually is some new retail development that's going on there. You get just a couple blocks away from Tennessee Street, and there is development, and it looks like around that area, the Renaissance Center, across from there, there may be something besides student housing, maybe?
It's student housing right now. And a big push that we went on a few months ago, and Joe Berg helped a lot with that, was to try to encourage the city to encourage local business to come back to Frenchtown. Because what we don't want to happen is that Frenchtown becomes, you know, the North Campus for FSU or the student housing area for FSU because it's so close to the campus. But we want to hold on and maintain that history that Frenchtown has. And at a certain point, that was the only place where, professional black people can live. And so we don't want to lose that history that's there. And we want to clean it up and bring it back to its renaissance, the real renaissance period.
Well, that's a historic area. So, of course, is All Saints. And, Paul, that's where you come in on that. Talk about the rehabilitation, the rebirth, if you will, of that whole All Saints area and what you envision for that going forward.
Well, I mean, it's sort of an amazing area right now, and I know, you know, Joe Berg has been instrumental in bringing that along. I got involved in All Saints. I'm an old guy now, right? I'm 59 years old. The first business I ever started when I was 28 years old was in Railroad Square. We started a Christmas ornament company back there, and it was sort of this, you know, bohemian enclave that went over into All Saints, and it's had this unique character for, gosh, I don't know, maybe going back to the 1830s. So it's sort of this, you know, very cool area, and we're working to retain the character there. And the interesting thing I think about All Saints, and the interesting question that we need to answer here in the next few years, is that going to be the line that we draw where we try to retain the local character, or are we going to see more development like we've seen coming down Gaines Street that's more of a generic nature? And I'm not banging on that development. I think a lot of those developers have done a good job, but All Saints truly has this unique character, and so, you know, we're going to be fighting to preserve that.
And it's really hard to go into one of those newer college town-like developments and say, how do we make this really unique? Because you're just walking in, it's turnkey, and how do you make that, number one, how do you afford it with the square footage rates that you got in that area, which are pretty pricey, aren't they, Mr. Berg?
It's a density, and there's expensive property values, and that seems to pass down, so... I think some of the earlier buildings were starting at $50 a square foot. They've come down a large deal, but there's still a lot of vacant spaces that haven't been occupied. And not to bash the developments or the businesses. It's going to take time to prove traffic and for the density to flow in there. But, you know, it's always an experiment because markets are markets. They're going to do what they do.
Sure. Meanwhile, you've got some other things that are going on. In case you're wondering, let's see, Bradshaw, where have I heard that word? Oh, Sally Bradshaw, Midtown Reader. Gee whiz, there's a connection there too, right?
There is indeed. She's my wife, so there's a fairly strong connection there.
All right. So you have that, which is now a very successful local bookstore, a lot of events going on, a lot of buzz about things that are happening. You got their rebirth of Lucy and Leo's Cupcakery, which so many people were worried that was going to go the way of the dodo. They are back now. So
they
Midtown
are
also on the move.
Yeah, no, Midtown, I think, is an area is doing great. They're well-defined, a lot of local businesses there. You're seeing a transition from businesses that you know, are less consistent with that vision moving out and more businesses moving in that are consistent. But it's a beautiful little shopping area as well.
Okay, and just a few blocks away there, Jesse Edmonds, as far as not only your complex there, but how do you see that area, Lake Ella, around the senior center, your property there, heading more into the downtown area? How is that moving right now? What's the plan?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I think everything right now is holding pretty stable. I know we've enjoyed a lot of success there, and so far it seems the community is really just continuing to really kind of enjoy Midtown more and more. The sidewalk improvements on 6th Avenue did a great job of connecting us with more of the, Manor at Midtown area and kind of connecting that. I'm curious to see what's going to happen with the North Monroe Street development and the kind of revitalization and the upgrade of utilities. That'll be interesting. We'll see if they handle that differently than they handle Gain Street. But we'll see how what that brings for traffic. But, the improved sidewalks have created walkability, interconnectivity between the businesses so people can park in one place and enjoy multiple experiences in one evening. And I think that's helped kind of, rising tides lift all boats. And that's, we've been very fortunate that the community has really kind of come together and supported us as like they have. We've got a lot of great people that have worked for us from day one, and we're hoping to create long-term job security for them in that regard, and I think Midtown's going to be able to offer that.
Well, you have mentioned something about public infrastructure, and that brings us to the cusp of another topic in our list of discussion topics here this morning on Perspectives, as we talk about how amenable the permitting process, all of the bureaucratic hoops that businesses have to jump through in order to go into business, how that might be able to be improved, and what you guys think. And we'll be back and talk about that in just a moment here on Perspectives. It's the 850 Shop Local crew here on our Perspectives this morning. Give us a call. We are talking about shopping local and the potential future here in Florida's capital city for small, locally owned and operated business endeavors. And you're always welcome to be part of that conversation or any other at 414-1234, 800-926-8809, or perspectives@wfsu.org. And a reminder, you can always find the program online at the aforementioned wfsu.org. Just go to our address on the web, click on radio, pull down programs menu, and then boom, Perspectives is right there. Hit that, and you'll find the latest show, which we usually try to archive within, like close of business day when the program actually airs. And then it is there on perpetuity, so you can go back and listen to it again and again and again. Talking to Joe Berg, Mataki Akbar, Paul Bradshaw, and Jesse Edmonds, local business folks all. And let's find out from you, Mataki, what you see as what would help the redevelopment of Frenchtown specifically, but businesses in general here when it comes to getting them up and running and doors open, cash register ringing?
I think with Frenchtown, I think we have to look at the CRA. there has been money put aside that was supposed to be for Frenchtown in the Southside areas, and I think a lot of that money has gone other places. Right now, Commissioner Nancy Miller has taken an interest in Frenchtown since we started talking about the student housing and looking at overlays and also looking at the money that's coming back into Frenchtown. So I think if we start with the CRA and the CRA really looking at businesses or ways to encourage businesses to come back to Frenchtown by outside of just the facade grants, but maybe small business loans or other things that encourage people to come into Frenchtown. And even cleaning up the area that's surrounding Frenchtown so that way when customers come in or people come in, they're not, looking over their shoulders or worried that something's going to happen just because they're coming into that area. So I think CRA would be one good step into looking at that. Is of course, a lot of red tape when any kind of business development, when you open your doors, even with a law office. I had to deal a lot with code enforcement and with the city with different issues. I was able to work it out, a lot of times because, anybody who's starting a business, it's just things that you just don't know. But I think, sometimes the city can do a little better in, okay, this is your first business. This is your first time you open up a building or open up your doors. Let me let you know these things that you need to avoid or these problems that you might can avoid. So maybe more interaction with those people who do want to come in and open up doors in areas like Frenchtown.
I think is it Gainesville that has like an ombudsman or an umbrella program that if you want to start a business, you call this person, they will hold your hand, they'll walk you through. You need to talk to this person, you need to call this office, all that kind of thing. Is it
this Joe? I'm hoping we could figure out how to do this. And it's the Office of Doing in Gainesville. I'm hoping that we could figure out how to do this in Tallahassee. It's just an office. The people have spent a couple weeks training in each department. Here's all the forms you need, whether it's opening a business or I want to plant the state tree on my property. They just say, here's what you need to do. And then in the process, they know you call, and they say, well, I'll set up the next meeting, and I'll liaise with staff, which makes it easier for staff experts to focus on what they're doing. It's just really slicks the track for everything.
Yeah, because Paul Bradshaw, you had some, if not horror stories, certainly some challenges when you were going through that whole permitting process, and what can you do and what can't you do, and one person tells you this and someone else tells you that.
Yeah, well, let me start with the disclaimer that I really like the folks at the city and the people in the growth management department, the building department. They've been very good to work with over time, and in many cases almost seem like partners. But having said that, I mean, they have an extensive set of regulations that they have to implement, whether they like them or not, whether they think they make sense or not. And sometimes it's hard to see some of the logic underlying it. And the example that we were talking about was we wanted to use palm trees in front of the freight yard project on Railroad Avenue. If you go there today, all you will see are palm trees in front of the freight yard project on Railroad Avenue. Nevertheless, we had to get a waiver in order to use palm trees in the redevelopment of that property. And just the application fee, if my memory is correct, for the waiver was about something north of $4,000. And then you have to hire the experts to come in, the landscape architects and folks like that, to make the case. So, you know, we were trying to essentially plant the state tree and had to jump through a number of hoops. It had to delay the project and it cost quite a bit of money. I mean, I think if you're looking at subsidies that can help projects that you want to help, there's really sort of three things to look at. One is a direct money grant. Frankly, I haven't really experienced or sought much of that. Another is to reduce the regulatory burden so you don't have to spend, you know, maybe a total of $5,000 to $10,000 to plant palm trees. The third thing to do would be to accelerate the permitting process itself. Because when you're developing, time is money. You've taken down loans, you're paying interest to purchase the property and things like that. So if you can compress that time period, that's also a very important thing that ultimately translates into lower rents for local businesses. And lower rents mean lower prices for the citizens of Tallahassee, which means you want to shop there more. You can compete more effectively against the big box stores of the world.
Okay. Jesse Edmonds, any thoughts you have on that?
I think I'm an incredibly rare example in the sense that, all of our projects have been relatively small scale in regards to city. We're not doing major, major building improvements, building new construction. Our permitting process has been a breeze. Again, you develop relationships with the people in the city and growth management. You know, we've treated them with respect. They've treated us with respect. We've honestly never had a problem. And I know that that's probably more of the exception than the rule. But I'm a little biased, I guess, in the other way, in the sense that we've had it relatively easy in that regard. I can see moving forward into bigger projects or trying to scale up it, you know, again, streamlining those processes and being able to crunch that timeline down a little bit. That's huge. I mean, that's the hardest thing about opening a business, particularly a restaurant, or I can imagine a real estate development. Again, it's that being able to float the upfront and basically just kind of survive. It's almost like a war of attrition where, you know, the bank account's trying to outlast what it takes to finally get people behind the project, whether it's consistently coming in the door or getting to full vacant or full tenants. So it's really kind of all I got.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of growth management hearing processes where some, and it doesn't even have to be a huge development like a Falls Chase or something. It can be something very, very modest in size where the developer contracts with the Bass folks or someone to come up with the design and where the streets will be and here's where the utilities hook in and all that kind of how much square footage for this and trees. And they give it and the panel looks at it and someone will say, that intersection looks a little bit too narrow. You're going to have to redo it. And that throws the whole process off by maybe 3-4 months. And do you not know enough going in, or do we need what Joe was talking about, someone to kind of hold your hand and say, well, here's some rules of thumb that you need to do when you're coming up with your plans and all?
I mean, I think it's a combination of both. I mean, you know, kind of like Joe was saying, it's about, you know, the Department of Revenue, you know, DBPR Growth Management, they kind of expect you to just kind of know it. And at least in a lot of the cases that, and experiences that we've had, you know, like you said, every time that they come in with a critique on something, it's typically they're enforcing some type of code or something that's down. They have to have some form of reference and not just come in and say, well, I'm having a bad day, so, you know, I've decided that this is wrong. Typically, the code is the code. It's black and white. And, you know, so it's just – but the body of what that means, the knowledge that you have to be able to dot all your I's and cross all your T's is just – unrealistic for any one person to know. I mean, we've had examples where, you know, electrical inspectors come in and they look at it and they say, nope, I'm going to fail your permit because you didn't strap this one piece of conduit. And the electrician's like, nope, he's right. Boom, pop a screw in, guy comes right back out, no problem. You know, it's like, man, he's really kind of busting my chops about a strapped conduit, but the code's the code. And, you know, it's just kind of a Just understanding all the little nuances that you have to go through, because the idea of like the intersection being too narrow, is it too narrow because they feel like it, or is it because there's some kind of new regulation and someone just missed it? You know, it's kind of rectifying that, I guess, in the process.
So I think what I'm hearing, Joe Berg, is that business people, even on the very most modest levels, not only need to know how to do marketing and inventory control and payroll and all these other sorts of things, but they have to get through a labyrinthine type of permitting and process to even get their doors open.
I think especially if you're building out an environment, you're trying to put a kitchen where there wasn't one before. We have a lot of old buildings here, so then there really is a lot to consider. Is this a what used to be here? Was it a car dealer? Was it a car maintenance shop? And is there a problem with the environment, or is it a safe place for food? But I think anything in general that lowers the barriers of entry and makes it more accessible for entrepreneurs. I mean, also, you know, when you lower the barriers to entry, you allow people to fail. And, you know, fail, then fail better. That's part of entrepreneurship, is figuring out solutions to things. And if the barrier to entry is mortgaging your house twice just to put in a hood, to put in, you know, an oven, then that you might not go ahead with your whole family and kids' future to try and experiment. So there's regulatory issues. There's things we can do to slick it. There's, I think, local financing that could be some programs aligned better, just on the private level. But the reason that it matters is for every dollar you spend local, three times more stays in the local economy, which means when it's a local business in Frenchtown and someone comes from out of the area and they spend a mom and pop shop, the money, the profits, not just the jobs, not just the profits, everything goes back into that neighborhood because the owner lives down the street. And when he wants to build a patio or a porch on his house, he's going to hire a neighbor down the street. So if we can get out of the way in any way that we can help raise the sea, like Jesse said, which will raise all ships. Whereas if you have this sort of super blocking wave of development, it becomes a tsunami and it pushes people out. It stops them from entering. So I think we need a balance in there somewhere. And there are a whole slew of reasons why local businesses, you know, they pay better benefits. They're really incubators of the local arts economy. They're paying the landscape architects, they're paying the musicians, they're paying the chefs to practice and develop their skill. And everyone has a role in the economy, so I don't bash chains, but you don't get that when it's a prefab environment or when it's a, here are tchotchkes, but they're not from here, right? And they extract more revenue out of the community. So while we're bringing all this tourism in and we're bending over backwards to bring folks in, there's holes in the bottom of the bucket if we're not being conscious as a community to decide to keep it here. We're just putting water in a bucket that's leaking out the bottom, and that doesn't build wealth.
And Mataki, as you were saying, there is a role for things like the CRA, the Community Redevelopment Agency, to help to facilitate this kind of thing. But it has to be smart, and maybe some of the things that we're talking about here can be not just cut a check and, hey, as soon as you boost up your tax take. Mm-hmm. That'll pay it all back. But right. How do you help promote some of these businesses to get started and to get the kind of knowledge that these guys are talking about?
Right. I mean, I think the CRA can invest in programs like the one that Gainesville has, and that will in turn put more money back in the CRA because you'll have more successful businesses that can raise the tax bracket and then get more money in the CRA. Of course, you know, politically, it's all kind of questions about the CRA, but I don't think that's the point of this conversation. But I think there needs to be more encouragement, more of an incubator, you know, either through the CRA or something that they support in order to increase that local business. I think the fact that we're in Tallahassee, we're one of those unique communities that prefer local business. I was in Savannah, you know, a couple months ago, and I think they're a perfect example of how a local economy can boost, local businesses and locally owned businesses can boost that local economy a great deal. There's nothing but a lot of, you know, retail shops that are locally owned, local bars in Savannah, and it's a thriving community, and everybody seemed to kind of like commingle a lot more and mesh a lot more and, you know, party together and hang out together as a community. And from what I can tell, even with the law practice, people prefer the local law practice as opposed to the big firm that just comes in and, you know, throw their name on all, you know, the buses and the billboards. But it's not that personal feeling. People tell me all the time, we prefer that personal feeling. I can walk in your office. I can talk to you. I can see you at church. I can see you at the restaurant. And the same thing with the Liberty Bar and what Mr. Bradshaw was doing, that these are people that you can touch, you can feel, and you can see where your money is actually going. So the more I think that the government can do to streamline or to encourage that, I think would be more helpful.
Sherrod joins us on line one, a local business person. Hey, Sherrod, welcome to Perspectives.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, we're doing good. Thanks for calling.
I was just calling, in regard. I own a local business here in town in the Game Street area. And I wanted to ask you, you know, your panelists and just, you know, what you all thought in general about, you know, the local businesses in particular, you know, in the Game Street area that were here prior to a lot of the new construction, the businesses that, you know, moved into the area that, you know, took a chance on the area to open their businesses and took, a risk in order to, you know, try to, you know, add to the community and to the culture. And then, you know, 10, 15, 20 years later, there's like a ton of new construction and a lot of the local businesses that were here originally are being pushed out of the area. And I'm wondering, you know, where is the city, you know, in regards to giving incentives to local businesses to, you know, stay in the area or help us out? Or, you know, whereas all the new, you know, construction seemed to go up pretty quickly and didn't have any issues with, you know, code, zoning, you know, things of that nature.
Wonderful question, Sherrod. But before we get an answer to that, I need a shameless plug from you. What's your business?
Retrofit Records on Game Street, the only record store in the city.
There you go. Yeah, and we remember when we had record stores all over Tallahassee. To Sherrod's question, guys, your thoughts here. We'll start anywhere.
Hey, Sherrod. He's absolutely right. So this is where we can get really into the weeds on policy. When you zone an area really big and you don't have things like overlay that Frenchtown's asking for, and you put your finger on the scale sort of when the CRA goes beyond, just in my opinion now, if it goes beyond just fixing the pipes and making it an attractive area and they start investing in super projects, but they're not investing in on an equal percentage for incremental developments, it does actually tip the scale. They're over-accelerating that growth. So what happens is the property tax rates start spiking in the area because now there's a trend and everything should be huge, and then it starts spilling from College Town. It jumps Railroad Avenue. It starts to hit the local property owners over there at an unreasonable rate, and the property owners translate it down to the tenants because they have to. So the rents start going. So as soon as you have a really great, and it is an amazing shop, Retrofit Records, you have a great shop that defines an area. Just as they get through 5 years of construction and all that traffic problem they have getting people in and out of the store and they fight to survive, the rent starts going up, but not at a really manageable rate. It starts going, well, at that point, it's sort of a property tax penalty to the property owner for not having sold and developed faster. And somewhere in there is where we don't have all the balancing mechanisms where it changes from the tide is going up, is raising all the ships, to here comes a really big wave and you end up in a storm. And the shipping container project, what I really love about the approach is that it backstops that sort of travel in that direction. Paul's only building to 28% of the capacity. You could have put, I think, 100 units on that spot, right?
And yeah, and I think we're going to wind it back from that, actually. I mean, we've sort of rethought it in the last 6 months, and the point is well taken. I mean, exactly the kind of business we're talking about here is the kind of the business we want to see and preserve there. So
let's get some more insights on that, because I'm really fascinated with the whole shipping container concept and how that's going to work, and that and everything else coming back at you here on Perspectives. We're shopping local and talking to local business folks about what they do and how you can get involved by patronizing their places of business. 414-1234, the local number, 800-926-8809, long distance, perspectives@wfsu.org. We'll be right back. And the discussion rolls on here on Perspectives on Local Business. Even during the break, you guys got into a great thing about, gee, how do you kind of balance what was there like along the Gaines Street corridor as far as some of the old and funky businesses, like you were saying. New Leaf used to be down there, and now they're not anymore, but Sherrod's Record Store is, and of course the Book Barn burned, and it's a mess. Shipping containers, though, Paul Bradshaw, tell us about that. What is the rationale, the thought process behind those?
Well, I mean, the rationale was that you could upcycle, you know, what were essentially discards of the industrial waste stream in America and turn them into something useful and beautiful. And so we sort of, you know, we became interested in that format of development, whether that would work. And I played around with it. I actually live on a farm, you know, out in Gadsden County, and we, you know, built some sort of prototypes there using it. And it was a really intriguing form of development. I mean, it was very energy efficient. They worked well for people sort of in that format. And we wanted to see if that could work on Railroad Avenue, because it has this, you know, heavy industrial vibe, which is consistent with the history of the place. It can be used to support, you know, street art and things like that, which is also consistent with the history of the place. So we're looking at that. But the project that we're going to build, the way we currently envision it, and I think we're going to complete permitting here in the next few months and then begin construction, is I think we're going to keep the cinder block buildings that exist along Railroad Avenue and just improve them, which is to elevate their facades, kind of put in cool signage, and keep it all local businesses there. So you'll end up with 4 or 5 retail bays there along Railroad, where you have All Saints Cafe now, and hopefully they'll stay. But you end up with 4 or 5 new businesses there, all local, and they feed into this central courtyard complex in the back, which was really an idea that Joe had. We kind of had this design meeting, you know, a year and a half ago, and the folks at the City Growth Management Department had. So if you talk about the city being a partner, you know, these guys, I think, were visionary and very helpful and supportive. And so you have a central courtyard area that becomes a blending zone for that area. So it's anybody from, you know, the 25 to 35-year-old crowd that lives in the area that wants to come in there, patronize the restaurants and bars that might be there. It's people who want to bring their kids. It's people who want to bring their dogs. I mean, it's really sort of, you know, anybody from that area can come in and in this mixing zone, you know, sit there and hang out and have fun. And so I think that's really going to be important for the area. And that area is going to be defined by shipping containers. The perimeter of that area is going to have containers, some as tall as 30 feet high. So if you can imagine, you would go there and, you know, you would buy tacos there, go in the back, climbing wall on those shipping containers where you could, you know, watch people climb, or you could climb yourself, a band stage there and things like that. And then behind that would be 12 apartment units that are built that are really, again, geared more towards the 25 to 35-year-old crowd, people who want a nice one-bedroom, one-bath apartment. It's not geared towards undergraduate students, and it lets people stay in the area. So if Domi Station is successful in establishing a business in the area, I mean, it's literally a 30-second walk from Domi Station and things like that. So that's sort of the vision of the project, where we amplify what is coolest and best about the All Saints neighborhood, the Railroad Avenue corridor, and that becomes things like local businesses, the industrial edge, street art, and stuff like that. So that's what we're shooting for there.
Yeah, it's kind of brilliant. Sorry, I didn't mean to
control. No, go.
That's the brilliant thing, I feel like, if I'm understanding your design correctly, that is different from what a lot of other developments are seeing, is the fact that you're building something that's going to integrate with what's currently there. Right. You're not doing the traditional mixed-use facility where you've got even more retail restaurant space on the bottom competing with the established market. You're integrating in with the market, and you're cohabitating with them. You're supporting them. You're giving people a reason to come to your shipping containers or to live in those apartments, because they're coming into an established, unique community instead of, hey, let's build another four stories of condos and let's put even more restaurants below them. Let's put even more, you know, flip-flop shops underneath them, kind of thing. And, you know, it just seems to be with the Cascades Project, with a lot of stuff in College Town, it's just build up and then fill it full of restaurants in the bottom. There's just not enough people. There's not enough business to support all of that and pay that kind of rent. So the fact that you're breaking that model in a way by incorporating that with the local businesses instead of trying to compete with them, that's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, good.
That's huge.
I'm glad you think that. Great.
That's the hugest. I mean, that's.
Can you come to Frenchtown and do the same thing?
Maybe eventually. You know, I got to get this one off the books first.
But I was thinking, Mataki, that is exactly what the old Frenchtown was like. And in fact, the template for small town America, or even enclaves in New York City, for crying out loud. You have residential up top that kind of carries the freight for the payback of the loan for the construction of the building, and it keeps the rents down for the retail establishments that are at the bottom, and so you can attract more local folks. Of course, that was in the days before franchising and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But that's where small business America got its start, was right. In on the ground level of those 3, 4, and 5-story residential buildings.
Yeah, but the thing is, they didn't build more and more and more on top of that. They filled out what they had, and they established those first, and then they expanded out. And that's kind of the interesting thing. I mean, I lived in Asheville, North Carolina for a while, and their downtown really hasn't grown that much in the last 25, 30 years, but what buildings that have been there for 100 years are now full. They're bursting at the seams with all these great local businesses, people living up top. They're building more housing around it to have a customer base. They have a huge tourism market, too, which supports it. But they're really doing a good job of kind of maximizing what they have before they just keep adding and adding and adding and adding to it. And that's kind of been a huge challenge for us, is the hyper-localization lately. So you have Bannerman Crossing. You have College Town. You have what's going to be Cascades. You're giving people less and less of a reason to move around the city. Right. And so instead of having people from the north side coming down to downtown get down, they have no reason to ever come down. And that kind of hurt us in the football season, because you have a lot of traffic that's now not passing us on the way home. And so hyperlocalization of these little enclaves has kind of been tricky, because we're just not big enough to really support that yet.
And a lot of the studies, it's interesting as well, are showing that the only real market, even in downtown Frenchtown area, and it's something that I know that they're struggling with, is only the thing that is attractive is student housing. With the marketability studies, they're saying, because Bethel Baptist, Reverend Holmes with Bethel Baptist, they have a project right now where they're trying to bring in, they're trying to redo the whole Frenchtown area and something that's more modern with local and incorporating the local businesses and everything. And so when they did the marketability study, they said, well, that's not going to work, but you can do more student housing. And, of course, the people that's in the area saying, well, we have enough student housing. And again, it takes away from the character and the identity of what we feel Frenchtown should be. So, I mean, and with Frenchtown being where it is, it's downtown, it's FSU, it's Midtown, it's a corridor. Mm-hmm. There should be something where it can draw people in, and I think we have to get behind projects such as what Reverend Holmes is thinking about doing, or anybody else who wants to do it, but of course have a local focus to make sure that it doesn't become, and not to take away anything from College Town, because I think that's a nice area, but it doesn't become just these large chains just coming in and just coming in the area, and when it doesn't work, they just move out, and we end up with empty buildings at that point. So something to encourage that local economy in that area.
Yeah, and to encourage the revitalization of the entrepreneurial class in Frenchtown, which used to be probably more vibrant than any place else, because it had to be.
It had to be, correct. I mean, that was the only place. So it was, you know, the Redbird Cafe was very, very popular at the time. You had Ray Charles, you had, you know, everybody who was popular singing, they would start in Frenchtown. And that was the entertainment area. So anything that can, I mean, of course it's not going to be the same thing it was, you know, 50, 60 years ago. But just like All Saints, just like Midtown, we want to bring that character back. And I think that will attract people to come in. As opposed to just, you know, just dealing with the same old chain. And
I keep thinking there. Beale Street in Memphis. I'm sorry, yeah. I'm projecting like here, but why not?
Yeah.
I challenge those assessments when people make them because the zoning, you know, in 97, they zoned up Frenchtown, Midtown, Collegetown, mm-hmm. Southside, all up the same as Collegetown. So I think when they do those, they say, well, who would come in and drop $100 million on this? Right. And this is where they're spending it right now. Mm-hmm. And the contrary argument when I said, yeah, but, you know, what does that do when the businesses aren't thriving or you end up displacing businesses and maybe residents decide to leave and you start that downward trend? And the argument I heard when we were in the room about Frenchtown last year was, well, you can't have – you won't attract those businesses in retail until you have that density.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, what businesses? And they said, well, you know, like an Urban Outfitters or a restaurant. And I said, but now we're getting to the point of it. That's not what – the community wants that extracts money. Mm-hmm. And then I said, but it doesn't hold up because Midtown doesn't have that density. And All Saints, we have less than 200 residents in All Saints. It is a destination. So I think if we've been for 30 years building, really the city and the county have become experts at building developments and working with developers to build complexes in the middle of cow fields. And we've been telling them and incentivizing that for 30 years, which wasn't entirely wise. Right. Now we're looking at the real cost of it coming home. And everybody wants to live in a city too in a dense area. But now we're taking that expertise and we're applying it to how to build in an existing community that's not a cow field.
Correct.
So I think there's a learning curve that we haven't written policies and examined these conversations yet. And it will keep bumping up against communities. And it really is important for the neighborhoods to push back and say, no, this is not the plan we wanted. My family's been here since this house was built in the 20s, and I want to give it to my grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And I do want to make money and appreciate and value. I do not want to end up paying $300 a month as a penalty fee for keeping my house while there's going to be five stories literally across the street from me,
right?
So in there, it seems like we're not supposed to ask the question or that it's anti-development. And I'm saying, why don't we think ahead 30 years about the consequences and the benefits, and how do we build it better?
Well, then, like to your point about density in Midtown, may not have a population density directly on top of it, but Levee Park is right there. Benton Hills is right there. Lafayette Park is all right there. I mean, you've got a lot of stuff within arguably walking distance that is right there. A lot of population is in that area, and it's a super short drive. You know, even going up into like Monticello Drive and the old Parkside Terrace and stuff like that, those are all right there within 3 or 4 minutes. And so, but we have there are a lot of vacant buildings in Midtown. There are a lot of opportunities for spaces in Midtown. And they're talking about building, I guess it was the Midtown Point or whatever it is, where Thomasville and Monroe come in.
Yeah, the Flatiron Building.
Way more restaurants, more retail, more restaurants, more retail. Okay, well, you know, we could do that. Or we can, you know, beautify what's already existing, create parking for people to come and enjoy the area more, bolster the businesses that are there. Give grants and opportunities to fill out the rest of the existing buildings and bring those up, and then we can add more.
Right. Because
I don't know anyone in Midtown who would say, oh, no, I couldn't be busier. That I don't think that's a feeling. So it's, you know, instead of saturating it even more, why don't we, you know, focus on parking and infrastructure and beautification and connectivity, and then we move forward, or keep trying to jump the shark and
– See, I see it from both sides because I also hear from folks saying, you know, gentrification and – that's a specific thing that's happening. People are being displaced. There's 14 criteria if you follow the Harvard list. Mm-hmm. It's not just we're developing because anybody who owns property knows you don't want it to sit still. You want it to appreciate. Mm-hmm. So you want the value to go up, and we have a lot of old buildings, and some of them are just going to blow over on their own.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It costs money to bring things up to modern code that'll resist 130-mile-an-hour winds and will do all these things. So it does require money. We do need developers, right?
Absolutely.
And we need to keep that moving. It's just if we are too top-heavy, we'll be like a drunk guy in a stumble who has to keep running faster to not fall, mm-hmm. right? Because we're reliant on bigger investments and more property tax returns to keep the government funded, to meet the demands for needs that we made 10 years ago that we didn't actually have a fund for. And I think when you see these cities that get out of control, and Nashville has some of it going on, it is they get in that forward lean where it's just everybody says, hey, they're, all growth is good growth, faster, faster, more and more. And they have a tendency in that process to steamroll over this discussion about our character, why we moved here, why we want to stay here, what do we want it to be. And right now is a prime time because we have this gateway project from the airport coming up. There will be Lake Bradford and Southside coming up. Frenchtown is on the list, everything that abuts Myers Park on one way or the other. So it's right now is the time that this conversation needs to be had, which is why I love that we're having this conversation right now.
Yes, because the alternative is, as was brought out in the thank you, Marina Brown and the Democrat, just a couple of days ago, you have 1,400 mattress stores.
Right. Yeah. That kind of goes back to the idea of like Detroit, for example. Detroit's kind of going through a quote-unquote renaissance, if you will. And But the idea is they're not piloting that renaissance necessarily with new construction. They're basically trying to refill out what's already existing and revitalize what's already there. So you take an older building that's existing, an existing footprint, you know, bring it up to a level of capacity. The idea is just kind of hold on, we'll get there, but let's focus on what we have first before we just go crazy with hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars of new stuff and forget what we had.
And this hasn't been undone. There are cities that you say, like, oh, that's a terrible city, and it's been that way. But there are cities that have done it well, and we don't hear about it. And we have experts. There are doctors and great friends at the FSU Department of Urban and Regional Planning who are also sort of socially engaged with community building that were there in Frenchtown and others who were in the room when they came up with the master redevelopment plans for Detroit and Cincinnati and Seattle and historically black communities and have studied for 25 years and also written the latest chapter and how this has done well.
Right.
So we have already the dearth of knowledge. Tonight at 7 o'clock at the school, there's a free program. You should check it out online. Someone's coming in to talk about progressive ideas about education and crime and poverty in city building. So everything we're talking about, how to balance it, a guy who did it for 40 years has written a seminal book, is going to come talk for free to anyone who's interested. And that's at the FSU DERP program. You'll just have to Google it, I guess.
And I think that's important what you said, not only focus on what we have, but who we have.
Exactly.
And that's the concern about the gentrification idea. And it's a balance, you know, because, like, I mean, the idea of gentrification is that you're moving out, you know, a lot of the people that have been there in order to build bigger projects and to revitalize. Mm-hmm. So, of course, we want that. You know, I mean, I lived in Frenchtown for 10 years. My family's been there for generation after generation. And so the balance is how do we build it up and make it better and build these businesses and bring it in? And at the same time, keep those keep those people that are there. And with that balance, I think you have, and that's why you have to focus on the local economy. That's why you have to focus on employing those people that are already there. Because if it continues on the trend that it's going right now, Frenchtown is not going to be Frenchtown. It's going to be student housing area for FSU. And we can tell the story, but it'll only be a story. I think you will see the same thing that you're seeing in other parts of town where the student housing is worn down, is drawn down. They can't bring people in. So that's because they didn't focus on, you know, that local economy and what really drives the economy.
And let me make a connection to why this matters to everybody who doesn't care, which would be, okay, so let's say that happens. The trend goes, we put jet fuel in that. Where do 5,000 displaced people go?
Right.
To the south where there isn't infrastructure, where there isn't security, where there isn't bus lines. What have we created?
Right.
We've created the end of the show, guys. Thank you so much, Joe Berg and Mataki Akbar, Paul Bradshaw, Jesse Edmonds talking about local businesses and the future of Tallytown. Thanks, guys, for coming in on Perspectives.
Thank you.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance by Taylor Cox today and Lydell Rawls on the Interconnects. And I'm Tom Flanagan. FSU's renowned for its athletics and academics and cultural contribution, a lot more, but there are some very enterprising ladies helping to generate the support needed for so many of the school's endeavors. We'll meet the women of FSU, our special guests, next week on Perspectives. Audio Call.
copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.